there was or the best there ever will be.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
And that's the bottom line, cause Stone Cold sucks up.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Pro Wrestling Central.
Hey, what's up, folks? Welcome to another episode of Pro Wrestling Central, episode 4. Today, Tuesday, June. What is the date today? Today, June 16th, 2015. Throughout my couple of months at the Torture Chamber Pro Wrestling Dojo, where I currently train pro wrestling, I've had the chance and the been very lucky to meet a lot of people, a lot of students, a lot of coaches, a lot of people in the pro wrestling business. And my guest today in studio is one of those person, one of those people that I've had the chance of meeting, Mr. Eddie Erdogan, 2013 Torture Chamber Pro Wrestling Dojo Rookie of the Year, 2013 Quebec Rookie of the Year. The only rookie of the year in Quebec history to get a complete unanimous vote for the rookie of the year. Former NCW Triple Crown champion, winner of the 2014 Feud of the Year with Jesse Champagne, former CRW Tag Team champion, a mixed martial artist specialized in Jeet Kune Do with over 10 years of experience, competed in martial arts tricking, which is an acrobatic form of martial arts. He's wrestled under multi feds here in Quebec and Ontario. My guest, Eddie Erdogan. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, man. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah.
That was quite an introduction.
Yeah.
Better than what I would have done for myself, that's for sure.
I did my homework. And yeah. Thank God for the internet that I was able to Google your name and all that shit came up.
I hope I only good stuff came up.
Yeah.
Cool. Because on the internet, you can find some fucked up stuff once in a while.
Dude, you have a Wikipedia page.
Do I?
You can't say that about a lot of people. I was like, man.
It's basic, though. It's basic.
It's basic, but it's there. I mean, to me, it's a sign of you're on your way or you're making it.
Yeah.
You've made it, you know? And I was able to find some information there, but I also found some information on some indie and local websites that had all your matches and stuff. And plus, you helped me out a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's good to introduce those things because not everybody that's listening to the podcast is going to know. They might know who you are, but they're not know. Oh, yeah, I didn't know he was. Holy shit, all of that.
For
stuff.
Sure. And especially in indie wrestling, like, you really have to almost self-market yourself because you don't have, like, a WWE or whatever, you know, putting your whole history out there and letting the fans know. So at one point, you got to, like, really step up and do it yourself, really. But I'm glad that others contributed to it, for sure.
That's awesome. And it's something you bring up when in the independent circuit, where you have to self-market yourself.
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in self-promotion. I've been all my life. And it's something, thank God, the internet, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, I use it a shitload. I use it for this podcast, for everything I do.
Yeah.
And in pro wrestling, especially on the independent circuit, there's definitely a self-promotion is a huge part of it. And you got to come up with your own t-shirts, you sell your own merch, stuff
Hell
like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
You don't have a big promotion, a big fed, a big company, big corporation behind, you know, making the shirts, selling the shirts, selling the merch and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So big part of it, it's something I think a lot of people like. Some people might not like because it's a lot of work.
You just got to get into it. Like, it's a hustle, right? Like anything else, it's a hustle. And I'm wearing my own t-shirt now. Like, that's self-promotion, right?
Yeah.
To a certain extent. And you just create your fan base. And if you're lucky enough and good enough, certain fans are really going to follow you, whatever you do in your career. And those are the fans you want. Those are the fans you're grateful for, you know? And those are the guys that buy your stuff. So at the end of the day, it's a give and take.
What I've noticed when I go to independent shows is that the fans are definitely more in it.
Yeah.
You know, the crowds are smaller, obviously.
Yeah.
So you get to see a lot more people, the reactions. And I see a lot of merch being sold and I see a lot of people with the shirts, you know?
Yeah.
Torture Chamber, I've seen your shirt
yeah.
a few times. Jessica, I mean, her shirt, I've seen her shirt a lot. You know, she does a good job, and it makes you feel like it makes you go, something's working here. Like yeah. you're doing, and obviously there's, you're not at the table selling your merch while you're getting ready for a match. There's yeah. somebody else helping you out, and it's a community like no other. Pro wrestling in the back or just in general is a community, and I've been introduced to that in the past couple of months, and it's something that I didn't really understand. I didn't really know like how tight knit some of these promotions are and some of these like surroundings and clicks, whatever you want to call them, you know.
It really is a family, but at the same time, like to a certain extent, like you're saying, you're not seeing a lot of the wrestlers sell their own t-shirts. Mm-hmm. That's only something I realized in Ottawa. Some big names they're at a certain point in their career where they could pretty much, you know, say I want to have my match right before intermission, and then they would literally right after their match, right after the crowd is still hot on them, go to the merch table with a towel and an ice bag on their head, and they're selling their own stuff, you know. So whenever it's a possibility for me, like depending where my match is,
of course,
that's obviously a great thing, because you're still fresh in the crowd's mind and you're the one that's there. So even if you're not selling, even if they just want to come and talk to you and say good match and all, they'll see the merch, and even if it's not that time, odds are next time they will end up, you know, forking up some money and buying some stuff.
Of course, it's not easy for everybody to just fork out $20-$30 for a shirt sometimes. No, but at least not, if man. You can put the seed in someone's head, yeah. said, man, I really like that guy. It was the yeah. first time I saw Eddie performing.
Yeah.
I don't have the $20 on me right now, but next time if he's at the show, I'll be like, man, I like his shirt. I like That's what he's cool. doing yeah. and stuff like that. It's a good thing. Now, in the list of things that I introduced you, one of the things that I can relate to is your years in martial arts.
Yeah.
You did Jeet Kune Do,
yeah.
which is actually one of the first martial arts introduction. When I was in Toronto, I started at a gym, and they trained Jeet Kune Do, which is Bruce Lee's yeah. Martial arts.
Yeah.
Now, so you did this for about 10 years.
Yeah, from 8 to 18, it was it used to be like a more traditional kung fu school, and then it was converted into a, you know, Bruce Lee concept Jeet Kune Do school. And yeah, man, like I was, the whole reason it started, I was like a really shy kid, and like not, I never got bullied, but like just shy, kept to myself. So my mom put me in there, and I don't know how your martial arts started, but like I was terrified for the first like year or two. I wanted yeah? nothing to do with it. Yeah, they all had their clique, the group of there, the higher belts, and I just didn't feel like I fit in. But then once I saw a bit of progress go, I was like, wow, I'm doing this forever kind of thing. And maybe I would have, because I was so close with that family. Like we talk about Torture Chamber, how yeah. it's a family, and like it's more than just wrestling. It's really like a unit. That's what I had there, and I'm sure you had it at some martial arts places too. And I might have continued, but when I reached about 18, the school actually closed.
Okay.
So, you know, I tried out some other places here and there, but the buzz was gone. You know, what was keeping me was really that unit, that family mentality. But luckily, I got a good 10 years out of it. So
you started when you were 8. See, my yeah. experience was different, because as a kid, I never did martial arts.
Okay.
I was from a small town in Eastern Canada.
Yeah.
And we had karate and taekwondo and stuff like that. Nothing really interested me. I was always interested in boxing, which we didn't have. So for me, it was never a question. I did sports as a kid and stuff. Okay. So when I started doing really martial arts, mixed martial arts, I was 24 years old.
Oh, okay.
So I was already like... There wasn't that fear. I was more goal oriented.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
it was like, okay, so I'm mature enough to know what I want.
Yeah.
How do I do this? Oh, here's a school. Knock on the door, show up. Yeah. Hey, how do I do this? And then it was like, I love this. I want to do more of this. And like you, it was about 10 years up to like last year, the end of this year, beginning awesome, of this year. So you did this for 10 years, martial arts, until you were about 18 years old. After 10 plus years, you said you tried out different, but it wasn't that the buzz was gone, the excitement and the motivation.
The feel was gone, but at the same time, maybe if I stuck it out at one of the places, I would have ended up getting that family vibe.
Again,
but I just didn't really give it a chance. You know, I had other things going, and I just felt like it was time to step away from it a bit. But you spoke about at a young age, you weren't even interested in karate. You were more interested in boxing and stuff.
Yeah.
I find that super mature, because back then, like, we're not the same age, but even though back then, MMA and all that wasn't as known. It was more karate, taekwondo, kung fu to a certain extent.
Yes.
So you watch Karate Kid and that's all you wanted to do, right? But, you know, looking back, I love Jeet Kune Do. But if I could have had like a jiu-jitsu school at the time, I would have been so down.
Of course.
Because I love grappling now.
Yeah.
But as a kid, you know, in the mid-90s, that's not around, right? It wasn't as common. So
I actually started falling in love with combat sport like early 90s, late 80s.
Really?
When I was a kid, yeah, like watching the Rocky movies and stuff like that. And then actually watching boxing matches, because back then there was actually boxing matches on TV,
yeah,
like free. You didn't have like to pay pay-per-view. No. Even if it was pre-recorded or just a playback, they would show it because it was way more popular. Pop it up just a little bit. And I remember watching boxing and going, man, and just mimicking what they were doing and going, man, I wish I could do this.
Shadow boxing?
Yeah, by myself at my grandma's house. And I, like everybody, a Karate Kid.
Yeah.
I remember watching The Kickboxer with Jean-Claude Van Damme. Getting introduced to that kickboxing Muay Thai style.
Yeah.
And I was like, that combat sport, there's something. And then early 90s, 93, 94, I remember going to actually our friend's house to watch UFC 2.
That's awesome, man.
And
saw some Royce Gracie there.
Yeah, he had an American satellite. His uncle had this American satellite like pirated, and we could watch like pay-per-views from all over the world. And we ended up watching that, and I went, man, this is crazy.
Yeah.
And we got into it and stuff like that. But like I said, I didn't have access to that information. For me, it was just like a thing in my head and a dream. And I was also a pro wrestling fan back then. So, and that was more accessible on TV, and I used to watch it every week and rent the VHS and do all that. But it when I finally made the steps and did the things, even though I was in mid-20s, it changed my life. It made me a totally different person. I'm way more disciplined. I'm way more focused. It kept me in check, and it changed my path from like being a young punk, partying. I wasn't a punk, but I would party, and I didn't really have a path in life.
Yeah.
I didn't know where I was going, to finding something where I can commit almost 100% of my time and my energy, and just wanting something. And I never had that feeling.
Yeah.
And I'm getting the same feeling with pro wrestling, even though I'm later than most people. I've had that experience. I know what to do. I'm focused. I'm driven. So when I started at Torture Chamber, it was the same thing. It was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I can actually do this. Now I just, let's keep moving forward and see where this takes me. You know?
For sure, man. And correct me if I'm wrong, but after like a sick martial arts session or even Torture Chamber, like when are you more relaxed minded and more like happy and giddy than after like a kick ass session, you know? It's like totally changes everything, man. You go to sleep good, you don't want to eat as bad sometimes, you know. There's nothing else open at the time, but it's like a total transformation.
It transformed everything in my life, from diet to the things I did, to going to bed early because I knew I had to train the next day. Like if I go to bed late and I know I have to be at the gym next day, I'm gonna be miserable because I know I did something wrong. And martial arts was the same thing. Although I did cut a lot of weight when I was in martial arts, so I was forced to eat well. Mm. But it's the same thing. Every time I'm training, it's always about eating well, sleeping well, making sure my body is physically fit to be able to take those bumps and to take those things.
Right.
But the martial arts aspect of it was more mental for me.
Because
all my life, you know, I was kind of a pushover. I wasn't getting really bullied, but I would never stand up for myself. I would just let people just whatever do. I don't want to get in any fights and stuff. And it was most of that for the most of my part of my life.
Okay.
And I kind of like outgrew that and said, fuck this. Like I have this, not aggression, I guess, or rage inside of me, and it just needed to get out a certain way. And when I discovered martial arts, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. I regret not doing it faster or when I was younger.
You talk about like, when I was in martial arts, I was a younger age, so I never competed, you know, in a fight, at a fight level. If I did it later on, maybe that would have been the case, but I never got to that. But you did that, so you experienced cutting weight, you experienced the mental process on that.
Yeah.
So you haven't had your first match yet, but I'm 100% sure that's going to help you in the most positive ways, because wrestling is very mental as well. you know, even though you don't necessarily have to cut weight, bigger is better most of the time.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah, man, it's you're gonna see. It's gonna people are gonna like other new guys are gonna be tripping out, and it's gonna help, man. Like,
it's a good thing because at the beginning of my amateur career in martial arts, the hardest thing I had was the mental aspect of it. I could be the best guy in the gym at practice, at sparring, but when came time competing, I would break down because I would question myself a lot. And it wasn't until later in life, until I met the Sherbatov brothers here in Laval, where I really absorbed their mental toughness, and I became better at what I did because my mental toughness became from a 4 to a 9 with them, or maybe an 8. I wouldn't say a 9, but it brought it up to another level, and I'm so grateful to have met those guys and that been at that gym for 4 or 5 years. Because it helped me. Under them, I never lost a competition.
Really?
Grappling, boxing, you know, it really took me. It sucks that it took me so long to discover these guys, or to I wouldn't say discover them, but to be part of that family clique and be like, man, these guys are because it's the same thing with Torture Chamber. When I walked in and met Drew for the first time, there was this instant connection. This guy's cool.
Oh, hell
and
yeah.
It was like, I'm so happy because sometimes when you don't have many options, if one of you the only options and the guy sucks or you don't have that connection, kinda you're
tough
like,
it out. Yeah.
Like, I don't really have any other choice than to be here if I want to be a pro wrestler because there's no really other school. But man, I wish I had more of a connection. But I don't have that problem. It was like chemistry, boom. Oh, I'm happy.
Awesome.
And he looks, we understand each other, you know?
And Sherbatov, like, congrats to them, man. Like, at least in Chamonix, I don't know if in Laval itself, they're like the dominant MMA gym, right? And they moved recently to a bigger place.
Their new place is amazing.
Yeah, I never went, but I just saw pics online and stuff, and it looks huge. Like, it's
state of the art, new equipment, everything is huge, man. They're making
good
a name
for them.
They have boxers now. David Lemieux
trains
out of there now.
Sure.
They've been posting a lot on their Facebook about him. He's fighting soon for a championship fight, and they have a lot of boxers, some good guys, you know. Yanni is
He's a beast.
Force to be reckoned with at 125.
He's a beast,
and they're becoming, you know, it was a slow build. They, you know, but they kept it together, man. They kept that little niche of brothers and family, and it just became a thing. And I'm really happy for them. And yeah, in the Laval area, there's no other martial arts gym in Laval Point. You know, there's a few in Montreal and stuff, but they're big. They're good. I'm happy for them. And it's good for them. I'm happy to see people do well in general.
In general.
Same thing with you guys. Like I was telling Jessica on the other podcast, I said when I see guys do well and I'm a part of a team, of a family, I'm so happy for these people.
Well, yeah, you don't want to be involved in something negative, right? So you're seeing all these, and it was the same with me when I started at Chamber. I'll get into that a bit later, but I was lucky enough when I was there wasn't a Monday class. I don't know. Maybe not lucky enough. There's a good reason for the Monday class. I really like it. I end up going to there more than I go to the Tuesdays.
Yeah.
But when I was there, it was only Tuesdays and Thursdays because it wasn't his place yet. He was at, we were using the CRW venue at the time where Chamber was. So it was straight up with the vets and a lot of the older vets were still there. So like, you're probably the same, man. When I first started, I was like, okay, I see that guy. Those are the top dogs. I want to be like them. I'm going to do whatever I can to try to be like them. I might not be as good, but that's the goal. And when you think that way and you're surrounded by top, higher up guys, it forces you to not settle, you know? It forces you to push harder.
You don't have a choice.
You don't have a choice unless you want to sink. But if this is really your passion, which you wouldn't do wrestling if it wasn't, because it's just really painful.
It's not a thing you do
it's
for
fun.
It's
not a thing. No, you have to love it, man. Yeah. If not, why are you doing it?
Yeah.
So it's huge. Yeah.
It's one of the things when I went to the Monday class, the beginner's class. And after a week, Drew was like, you can come on Tuesday.
That's
you
amazing.
Come on Thursday.
Man.
It was a week or two, you know, in. And so when I got to the advanced class, I said, okay, who are the top two guys? I don't want to gravitate around everybody, but I'm like, who are the top two guys right now? And then I'm like, oh, these guys are always here. I've seen them at so I'm like, I'm going to, and then there's a board with the depth chart.
Yeah,
so I'm like,
I saw
who
that.
Are these
That's
guys?
That's a new thing, yeah.
Who's these guys? And so I gravitated towards them. Number one, I'm lucky that the two guys that I gravitate to are mostly my size, so I get to drill a lot of things with
Which
them.
Which are?
Dom and Mikael.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
And so it's the same thing when I first walked into a martial arts gym.
Yeah.
I did grappling when I started beginning, and I remember doing the first grappling class, and then after a week or two, I was like, "Okay, who's the top dog here?" I became friend with that guy, and I constantly got tapped out by that guy for months.
That's
and
what then you I need got to do, better man. Yeah. Better. Or else you're not going to progress. You need to get tapped. In wrestling, you're not getting tapped, but you need to be around that vibe.
And you need to, if you want to progress, I think you need to practice these drills and with people that know how to do it, and then so you can, on the other side, you can do it with someone else. When you're doing it with someone else, it betters yourself and it betters the other person as well.
It's a give and take constantly. Yeah. Constantly.
So.
And you're always learning, and let's take this time now talking about always learning. This week where we have Too Cold Scorpio at Chamber, who's, if you don't know who he is, go and find out, because this guy's 30 plus years, WWE, WWF, WCW, ECW, Japan, all over. He's doing two seminars Friday and Saturday for beginners and advanced for any worker. You don't have to be chambered to be in this. So, contact us or contact Drew and he'll give you the detail. And we were there last night. We were lucky enough to be able to train with this guy.
Yeah.
And we were talking yesterday, man. Someone at his age with 30 years experience, to a certain extent, I wasn't expecting him to be as involved as he was. Like, he rolled with us. He sweated with us. He did everything.
He was almost... drills. He was part of the class.
He was part of it. And he was fucking good.
Yeah.
it didn't show that he was at an older age than we were. He was amazing.
He's still in good shape.
Oh, man. This guy is ageless.
For a guy that's 49 years
old.
Yeah,
he's ageless.
He still works, I believe.
Yeah, 30 plus years. He's with Noah now, yeah.
So, it's like... It's nice to see. You know what? It makes me feel good. It's because I see guys like him. Yeah. And I wanted to ask him this yesterday. I didn't get a chance. 30 plus year in the business. If there's one thing that he's had to do is that he's had to keep in good shape and somewhat injury free if you're going to do 30 plus years in this business.
Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of it isn't your choice. Injuries happen. Sometimes they happen sooner than you would like.
Yeah.
You just have to roll with that. But if you could keep safe, and a lot of it is keeping safe.
Yeah. There's luck involved.
There's luck involved, but a lot of it is choosing your spots, man. Keeping it safe, not taking too many bookings, which at first we all do. I did it too. And looking back, I wish I hadn't taken as many, because it burns you out, man. You shouldn't always wrestle. You have to have a bit of time to yourself, social life, family life,
Of course.
You're going to last longer that way too. But the schedule he had, all the different high-end feds he was in,
And all the travel he did, because he traveled quite a bit. He was in Japan for a while.
He talked about it yesterday too.
In Mexico, in the States, in Europe. I mean, you don't travel lightly when you're a pro wrestler, especially when you're starting off.
No.
If you can get booked in Japan, you're on the first plane out. There's no saying no to that kind of chance. So it really surprised. It didn't really surprise me, but it gave me a glimpse of what it could be. Because I've seen guys that do it for 15, 20 years, and then after that, they're blown out. Yeah. Injuries catch up to them.
But even that is amazing.
Yeah.
In this business, even that's amazing. And this guy's doing 30 plus years, and that just shows. Man, we've said it before. I've promoted it online, but I might be biased, but I don't think there's a school in Quebec like Chamber. Drew runs 3 to 5 times a week, depending on the schedule. Sometimes 5 times. Yeah. That's ridiculous. That's no one else does that. Other feds, they'll run even once a month schools, depending when they can get access to the ring and when they could set it up in a venue, So, guys, it's for myself too. I have to discipline myself to go more often also. It's really, if this is what you want to do, there's no better place. And what did Scorpio say yesterday? He goes, after 30 plus years, you're still learning.
Of course.
So, and a lot of what he said, Drew says, they've both trained at New Japan Dojo, so they have a similar take on that.
When you get two guys like that with their experience, you put them together, you realize, I was talking to Matt about it when we were driving home yesterday, and I said, you start realizing that when Drew talks, not saying that Drew, I ever thought that whatever he says, it wasn't true. It's just that the business of pro wrestling, for the most part, is the same all around the world for anybody. It's like there's obviously different variations and different styles, but the basics are the same. You got to sell, heel, face, all the things he was saying. Certain things, I'm like, Drew drills that all day, every day. And it's like, it's...
But you're saying that, and it's true.
Yeah.
But like, man, if you go to other places in Quebec, it's not that obvious. Like some guys really that are teaching, they don't emphasize, they don't know the basics because they were never taught it themselves. So they're just showing what they know.
True.
So like, we're fortunate, man. We're fortunate to be at a school like that. And I was saying it last night, like I didn't come from, and neither are you now, from another school prior and then converted to Chamber. This is where I started. So I don't want to say I took it for granted because I knew I was in a special place, but we didn't have a shit school that we were in first to compare. Yeah. Guys like Boogly or Kevin or, you know, a lot of other people that have gone through Chamber, they have been at other places. Not to say those places were bad.
No.
But there are some schools in Quebec that are just like, wow. Like, we've been with Drew to teach like some seminars, and there are guys with like years in experience, like 10 years, that like couldn't do some of the basics. And I was, this is like a year or two ago, I was so embarrassed. I'm like, I can't tell them how long I've been wrestling because this is like ridiculous, you know?
Well, that's what they say sometimes. Yeah. Drew says that sometimes. Said, you'd be surprised. True, there's guys that can't reverse certain
Wait till you get out. Like, wait till you get out a bit. You're going to be like, man, I got it good.
Yeah. I did my research when I did my research. As much research as you can do in finding a pro wrestling school.
Yeah.
But when I first decided that this is what I wanted to do, I Googled, and then when I found Torture Chamber, I it surprised me a bit that it was like, oh, I can just do pay and show up for class.
Yeah. It's structured. It's like it's a regular like, martial arts I'm school like, or something.
Man, this I can take. I always had that in the back of my head, go, I needed to know someone to get me in and then start training me once a month, once a week. When I realized I had the opportunity to be there 2, 3, 4, sometimes 5 times a week,
it's ridiculous.
I'm like, man, imagine how fast I can progress and like catapult myself into the business. And that's what I wanted. So when I showed up for the tryout and I saw the school and I saw how he ran thing, I'm like, oh, this is my kind of guy. This is my kind of gym. And it's like,
you came from an MMA background, so, and you're older too, so maybe it wasn't the same, but when I first heard, like, you found it online? That's how you got it?
Yeah, I did a bit of research. I ended up finding the Facebook page because there's no website. Yeah. So then I looked at pictures and stuff, and then I compared it to someone other ones. I was like,
the brand this, and, yeah. You know, yeah, man.
Statements and stuff from other people. I'm like, this seems like the only option for me right now. There's no other option.
You see, when I was first trying to find a school, I didn't, actually, it's surprising. I didn't see Chamber at first. I saw NCW had a school. And I love NCW, you know, nothing with them, but I wasn't 100% sold yet. There were a few other feds that were running their own school. And I took a friend and I'm like, yo, like, it's been like a year or two. I'm trying to go to a Quebec indie show just to watch.
Yeah.
Let's actually get some balls and go. You know, we never went to anything indie before. So I didn't know the atmosphere, but I'm like, let's just go try it. And it was a CRW show at their old venue. And I was surprised at how many people were wearing the Torture Chamber shirt coming out. At the time, Shane Hawk was there. He was wearing the shirt. Kevin Bryan, Drew Onyx. So they all had the Chamber shirt. And it says Pro Wrestling Dojo on the bottom. So I'm like, okay, pretty much everyone has this shirt, right? And from then, I got in hold with Drew Onyx because it was obvious he was the teacher. And yeah, like, it was really through going to the show and seeing that like all the good guys on the show were from there. So it was like, okay, let me try that out. And I don't know about you, but first time I got there, I was like, man, the name Torture Chamber is scary enough. Yeah. And if you don't know Drew, he can come off a bit intimidating. Yeah. So I was like, all right.
The first time you meet him, you're like, damn. You know,
big teddy bear.
big black guy, 350 pounds or 320 pounds, whatever it is. But, you're like,
coolest guy, man.
You talk to him for 5 minutes, like, whew.
Coolest guy.
Yeah, it was the same thing. I went to an NCW show just because I was aching for some indie. I hadn't seen an indie show in years. And I was like, I want to see what the indie scene is like. And I was like, oh yeah, I check it out. And he was main eventing.
Yeah.
And then I started looking at the older cards, and I was like, he's always main eventing, and he's the champ. He was the champ when I first went to the show. I'm like, that's the guy that runs the Torture Chamber Wrestling Dojo. Hell, he's the champ. He seems to like, I saw him wrestle. I'm like, man, this guy's good. So I okay, let me. And then more research. Then I'm gonna check this place out. I sent them an email, and then I took a couple of months before I took the necessary steps to actually.
And you went to it was a tryout, right?
Yeah, it was okay. The weekend of WrestleMania. They were having a Sunday tryout. They had announced it on the Facebook page.
Was I
there?
Because I was at one of the tryouts helping, but I don't
know. No, it wasn't it that was, one. Boogly was there.
Okay.
And Kevin.
It wasn't the same one.
And there was a few other guys. Jessica, I think, was there, and Stacy.
But that's a cool-ass concept, having the tryouts, because it's really giving you a feel of everything. Like, when I started, they weren't doing tryouts yet, just because, like I said, it wasn't his place, so we didn't have access all the time. So, example, on Tuesday, if class was at 7:30, 6:30 was the rookie practice.
Okay.
So, you'd go for an hour, and it's literally, you know, 200 bumps. Just break your back on the mat. And then he would tell you you could stay and watch the regular practice if you like. And do that like two or three times, and then you slowly integrate into the Tuesday. So it was a bit different, but I guess the essence is the same.
Yeah.
Just do a ton of bumps and start getting the basic on chain and the fundamentals and the importance of it.
The first day I was there, the first tryouts, I didn't know what to expect. I thought I was just mainly going to watch and see what it was going to.
No, hands
on. I did 120 bumps the first day I was there.
You start on your ass, and then
couldn't
you
move
get
my
up
neck for a week. I was like, "Holy shit!" I kept, you know, I was like, it surprised me how I love taking. Like, I don't love taking bumps, and but it's like how comfortable I am from the get go. He's like, "God, let's see if you can take a bump," and he's like, "Do this."
Well,
then
you
do
have
that. And
MMA background,
like,
so
it's not that bad. Yeah,
it does help. It does help. The pain is always going to be there to a certain extent, but it does get
of course.
Better. Like, your neck's not aching like crazy.
No, not anymore.
You know,
my body was in shock for a few days where. It didn't know why it took all that strain, all that
because it's unlike anything else. Like
no.
In any other sport, you're not supposed to purposely fall. Like even in MMA and like when you're going for a throw, like you're trying to protect yourself.
Yes.
You know, you don't want to fall on your back, and you know, like you do learn how to bump in martial arts to a certain extent, but like it goes against nature. Like even if you slip and fall, you want to put your hands forward usually. This is like, no, I'm going to fall back and like take the blow, you know? Totally different. I remember the first time I had my training, it wasn't a good start, man, because I got lost going a little bit, so I was not late, but I was maybe like 3-4 minutes late, and it was me and another guy having our first ever trial, Justin Turnbull, who you've met before, and he was already in the ring with Drew when I got there, so I was like, fuck, I look like the bitch right now, like, let me get changed really quick. Like, I'm so sorry I'm late. And I got in the ring, and Drew told me later, he goes, I written you off. I was like, fuck this guy, like, he came late, he really doesn't care, you know? And then we just started bump, bump, bump. And I've told Justin this story, we laugh about it. I'm like, I looked over and I'm like, this small little fucking 130 pound kid is not giving up. He like, I'm like, I can't quit. If he's not gonna quit, I can't quit. You know, we have to at least be at equal. So, you know, you persevere and you hang in there. And he told me that he felt the same way. So none of us wanted to quit, you know. And then we talked afterwards. I don't know if you guys did that too. We kind of sat down 5 minutes one-on-one. And, you know, what are your plans? What do you expect out of this?
Yeah.
And then what I expected out of him. And I was like, man, this guy is super chill. And then like a week or two later, I signed up, you know.
Yeah, it took me a couple of weeks just to come up with the...
Yeah.
To make the 100%
sure.
commitment.
Yeah,
like, I knew I loved it. I just wanted to get my things in order and really make the commitment. But once I made the commitment, it was like all balls out. You know, I was like right in. I wanted to bring this up because to me, there was this transition phase. I finished my martial arts career, if you want to call it that, because of injuries and concussions. And I was like, fuck, man, I can't keep doing this. I'm not going to get paid for this.
Yeah.
And my renewed passion and love for pro wrestling in the last couple of years, which had kind of dwindled in the, you know, in my 20s, especially when I got into martial arts. So when I decided to make the bump, it was really just it was like an impulse, like let me just Google. One day I was at home and let me Google how many pro wrestling schools there are, and then it's like, oh, it's somewhat easy to go to. I'm like, maybe this is something, and then boom. 2-3 weeks later, everything was going. You did martial arts for 10 years. What made you want to do the transition into pro wrestling?
Well, like you, man, pro wrestling was my first love always. 7 years old, flipping the TV open and seeing Shawn Michaels do what I looked like magic at the time. You know, like he was like the best worker at the time, 96, 97.
Yeah.
It's always what I wanted to do. That's no secret. my, I don't know how your family was, but, you know, I come from an Armenian family, and everyone in my family is like, you just don't do this. Like, it's not what we do. So it's
not part of your culture.
It's not part of the culture at all. So, and, you know, I didn't have the balls at the time to say, look, this is what I love. I'm going to give it a chance. Yeah. I don't know if it's going to work, but I have to give it a chance. At the time, it wasn't that. You know, I kind of just suck it up and I'll watch it quietly in my room and just dream. Like, I would watch the Chris Benoit DVD or the Eddie Guerrero DVD and see how their careers transition from one place to another. And I'm like, fuck, I just dreamed that that would be me, you know? But, and like you said, you kind of dwelled out in your
20s. Yeah.
I just kind of fell out of it. Not because of martial arts or anything, but just because I'm like, okay, like, this isn't going to happen, you know? So might as well not dwell on it. And then from, like, I could have went to school for wrestling at 18, but I only went at 21, 21 and a half because of that, because of the fear of shit, like, my family, this, that, what do I do? And then finally, when I reached, like, 21, I'm like, my mentality, which isn't true because you went at a much later age,
yeah.
is awesome, man. But my mentality at the time was like, okay, like, kind of now or never, like, I got to, like, at least just see what I can do. And what reassured me was, because it feels a bit overwhelming. You're like, I'm going to get involved in this pro wrestling. I don't know what it consists of. I don't know how it's going to work, if I'm going to be any good at it. Like, what's going to happen to me? So I just said, okay, look, it's easy to go. You talk to Drew. Go for one practice. See how it is. You might suck, and he might tell you this is not for you.
Yeah.
So at least that way I'll know, you know, enough of this. Enough of this dream. But no, I ended up doing really well. So I just took it one day at a time. And having that one day at a time mentality, especially for something as huge as wrestling,
yeah,
makes it a lot easier. And the next thing you know, all right, you're having your first match. Really? Already? Okay, cool. So
I think people have this lack of understanding. It's not like you're going in, you're making an informed decision to lose weight or to start doing something, I don't know, mundane like everybody else is doing. Mm-hmm. You're not showing up at a place where there's 50, 60, 100 other people doing the same thing.
You
decided to do pro wrestling, and yeah, it's always the same reaction. Oh, I'm in the business of pro wrestling, and you're like, most people are like,
Olympic or like on TV.
Yeah. And when I tell people I'm going to wrestling practice, they're like, oh, you like wrestling?
Like amateur,
you
do wrestling?
MMA and stuff like that. I said, I used to, but no, I'm talking about pro wrestling. They're like, pro wrestling.
You
I'm
just like, got to say like WWE. Hulk Hogan, yeah.
Oh, like, and then it's like their eyes go like this.
Yeah.
They're like super curious, or they're like,
of, yeah,
like, what the hell? Like, I've never met any, and for the most part, it's because when's the last time you met somebody that was a professional wrestler or that was training to become a professional wrestler?
I got into it, I knew one guy in high school that wanted to do it, and I think he had a few, he trained a bit with Drew.
Yeah.
And that's the only guy. So it's unheard of.
Yeah.
It's all fans that want.
Of course.
Or dream, or guys that just don't give a shit.
Yeah. It's not like martial arts nowadays where every other fan can just step into a gym and say,
yeah,
I can be a fighter, I could do that. And then they go to one training practice and you never see them again. And how many times has that happened? And I'm sure it's happening at the torture chamber where I've heard stories about guys taking their first bump, they roll out of the ring, they walk out,
and they're
done, you know?
I've seen it.
But when I packed my bags, and I remember when I emailed Drew, I said, oh, you're having a tryout, do you have spots? Mm. You know, he's like, yeah, come on over. It was about 4 weeks till the tryout.
Okay.
I hadn't been in a gym in months.
So like, it's go time.
So I'm like, 1 month every day, sometimes twice a day, I'm at gym doing conditioning, strength and conditioning. I didn't want to show up there and look like a slob and then blow out after like 10 minutes, like skipping ropes, and you're warming up and you're just like, ugh.
That's like the worst fear, man. You can't even finish the practice.
So I was like, I need to be ready for this. It's all about making a good, I don't have the luxury of time anymore. Mm. For me, it's about making a good impression and making the impression that to Drew, to everybody around, that this guy's for real and he looks committed to wanting to do this, which I am. But I also wanted to be ready and show that I was ready, because he's going to invest a lot of his time into me and to us and to his students. You have to, it's kind of give, like you got to invest yourself 50% into this
each. But as much as it is 50% each, if he likes you, and he's not a jerk, he's not going to just say, oh, I like this guy's face, so I'm going to like him, and this guy I don't like.
Yeah.
He's attracted by guys who want it, who do well.
Of course.
And even if they don't get it on their first time, that look on their face that I'm fucking getting this.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, he wants that. He wants those hustlers. So if he can see that you're like that, man, he'll give more than 50%. Like, the amount of stuff he's done for me, like, oh my God. Like, you know, if you go to another school, like, it's just not the same. Like, he really opens so many doors.
And he's a huge help. And I see that with the guys that are already in the ring wrestling. And he's such a huge help with promos and doing everything.
That's another thing. Like, I don't know if you've seen, but, like, for me, anyone who's come out of chamber and waited and debuted when he said they were ready and didn't rush it or went behind, you know, or whatever, did it with him, with his guidance, I haven't seen one guy mess up yet. I haven't seen one guy have a bad debut. You know, that's everyone's good. Kind of just going up right away, you know? Some guys faster than others, but, like, it's... Yeah, the school is known for success. So now everyone who comes out has to kind of follow in that footstep.
Well, it didn't take me long to realize that you're right. The school is built for success. They're successful. They've put a lot of successful wrestlers in the... Whatever the case may be. On the scene.
Yeah.
So once I realized that, which was within a week, I gave myself to Drew, said, listen, whenever you think I'm ready, you're the boss. I'm not gonna be like an asshole about it and go, I think I'm not ready, or I think whatever the case may be. But you're in charge, you're the boss. Train me. I'm here to learn.
He loves that.
When you're ready, he loves when that. You think I'm ready, I'm gonna be, if you think I'm ready, I'm ready. This is it, you know?
Yeah.
And that kind of like a connection with someone makes a huge difference, because I trust him. I trust that when he tells me I'm ready, he knows. He's been in the business for long enough that he's like, if he tells me I'm ready, I'm ready. I don't have to start doubting myself. Am I ready? Fuck, did I train hard enough? Because martial arts, sometimes you're in your training, there's a lot of time you're part of a team, but there's a lot of stuff you have to do on your own. You have to show up to the gym. You have to do your cardio. You have to do your things. Like, especially when you're an amateur. So a lot of times when you show up to a competition, to a fight, you're like, the moment you start telling yourself that I train long enough, it's game over. It's for me, that's what the problem was.
That's another thing. Speaking about training for martial arts, unfortunately, when it comes to pro wrestling, people think that as soon as you graduate and you start having your first few matches, that especially on the indies, it's like, I'm going to do nothing all week and then go wrestle. Do nothing all week, go wrestle, which could work, but you're not setting yourself up to go further. You're just setting yourself up to plateau doing that.
Yeah.
I'll wrestle every Saturday or every second Saturday and whatever. And in every other sport, martial arts included, you have to train. It's not just like, you don't, for martial arts, you don't just fight in a real fight,
two months off
and then go fight again. Like, you have to constantly train. And yeah, easier than said than done. You know, there's work, there's that, there's everything. But at a very minimum, if you can do it, you know, even if it's not a full-time schedule, if you can do it to a certain extent, like, chamber is the place to be. It's not just for beginners. Like, we have wrestlers that train at other places and are wrestling, and they would come and just go through the motion because they knew that they had something big coming up, or they just wanted to further themselves.
Yeah.
And a lot of those guys ended up getting better, and then they got pushes somehow when they went back to their feds, you know? Even someone like Kevin Owens, I'm sure we all tried to promote her as much as we can. He came to chamber when he was getting ready for his WWE tryout, and he was there for, I don't know, like a month or two. I don't really remember. And first of all, it was awesome for us because we got to work with him.
Yeah.
And he said it after on Jericho's podcast. He's like, you know, of course Kevin Owens is awesome, and he you know, he would have impressed them regardless if he came to chamber or not. But his words were, thank God for Drew and Torture Chamber, because they got me, and those drills got me ready, my cardio ready for the drills at WWE, because Drew has been a WWE trial, so he knows exactly what there is there. So for someone like that to come and train, for someone like Don Paisan, who's come and trained, 3.0, who's trained, XS, who's trained, like, these are top guys. So for everyone else, there's no excuse, man. Just come and work out, you know?
Yeah, we've said it many times. There, when it comes to wrestling school, Torture Chamber, just, it's the mecca of, especially, I mean, in Quebec, but, you know, all across Canada. If you look at it, I've done research anywhere else, but for Christ's sakes, if Kevin Owens, you know, comes in and gives his stamp of approval on
like something, you said, like, I haven't exactly done that much research to see all the schools in Canada.
Yeah.
But my honest opinion, I would say Lance Storm School and us. Like he has a he has a school, and I don't know if he still has a relation, but I think he had a Canadian developmental thing for WWE or something like that for a while. So I mean that's huge, of course. But because like the dungeon isn't around anymore.
It doesn't exist.
So my honest opinion, like I don't know what else there would be. All I see is those two. You know,
I'm sure there are small local ones, like you said. There's a lot of feds that have their own somewhat school.
Oh, there's hundreds.
It's not like they're doing it week in and week out.
No, it's not like they have a curriculum. And, you know, like Chamber runs Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, no matter what. I think like a 1 out of 2 Wednesday.
Yeah.
Sometimes every Sunday or a 1 out of 2 Sunday.
Every 2 Sundays and lately every Wednesday.
Yeah, so that's almost, that's 3 to 5, you know, 4 to 5 days, you know, doesn't, you know.
And you'd be surprised how much that extra day or two a week makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. That's
for sure.
It's almost, it's 100 more practice a year.
For
sure. If you think about it, you know.
And that's how you, like, now it's a little different for me. But when I first started and I was training for to be a wrestler, I was the guy that was there. Well, we only had Tuesday and Thursdays, but I was there Tuesday and Thursday. And then we had the rookie practices. So I would volunteer, go with Drew to help him teach the rookie practices. If someone chose to have a private, like someone that already wrestles and wants to have a private to warm up, I told Drew, I'm going to come, I'll bump for him, I'll do whatever. So being there like that, I ended up doing so much more than other guys. And then I started wrestling in 5 to 6 months, and some people didn't understand why. Well, fuck, I was there all the time. Yeah. I didn't bitch, I didn't complain. And I went to the privates, I went to the rookie practices, I got my own privates. You know, you just got to step up and do
it. Of course.
And you look like you're on the right road so far. So
it's funny because when I first went to the tryouts, I had a talk like you just said with Drew and said, listen, this is definitely something I want to do. Give me some time to come up with the cash and whatever I needed to do. And I said, and he told me, he said, I'll normally average 12, 15, sometimes 18 months. Till someone is ready.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
I had no expectations. So I, you know, after a couple of weeks, I met you for, and then someone said, oh yeah, Eddie did it in 6 months. I'm like, okay, so
Eddie?
There's number one, there's a new standard.
Yeah.
It's no longer 18 months or 15 months for me anyway, because that's just who I am. No disrespect to you.
No, man, you should be. Like, everyone should be trying to do that.
If someone did it in 6 months,
it's
what's
not
stopping
like I'm the Grinch and
so.
If someone beats me, it's like, hey. Like, everyone should aim for that. Yeah, like, why settle, you know?
So if I get it after 8 months, at least I'm not
that
aim,
you
know? And then I met you, I think, when we were getting ready for the Ultimate 8 show. You
came
possibly. In. I think that was about the same time. I was about 3 weeks in at that point, 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, and I couldn't believe you were at 3 weeks. So I was like, I kept asking Drew, and he's like, yeah, 3 weeks. I'm like, stop fucking with me. How long's he been here?
And it's I can't say enough about how much my past in martial arts has helped me. Because number one, I'm coachable. I know what to do. I know what to listen for, to look for, and I understand the commitment that's needed
it's
in
huge.
Order to progress.
It's huge.
I think a lot of people just don't get, and I think it comes with maturity, it comes with age, they don't get that you have to commit yourself, not just at the gym, but when you're outside the gym. Like, I'll be honest, pro wrestling right now at the gym here, it consumes a lot of my life. I have my family. I take great pride in spending time with my family and stuff like that. But you know, when I'm home alone, I'm watching wrestling. I'm listening to wrestling. I'm listening to a lot of wrestling podcasts to try to get in the as much information on the business as possible. But I'm also cutting promos or writing down promos, trying stuff like that, working on stuff, because I don't have a character yet. I'm building who I think I need to be, or where Drew, or where I think I need to be, or who I want to be when I first have my first match.
Be yourself times 10.
Yeah, exactly, right?
That's what it is.
So when you started, obviously your persona, your character in the ring, you go by Eddie Erdogan, you go by your real name.
My real name, yeah.
It's basically you just turned up to 15, right?
Yeah, like when I started, Drew like really just told me straight up, oh, you're going to be a great face. And most guys, when they start, like, no, I want to be a bad guy because you can do this and that. But he's like, shut up, you're going to be a face. I'm like, okay, cool. But yeah, I didn't have a character. I didn't have a name. I wanted to go by Eddie no matter what,
because
it's my name. And the last name, I wasn't sure because I'm like, people are going to have a bit of a hard time pronouncing it. You know, like in my country, the way you pronounce it is a lot different than how I'm pronouncing it for wrestling.
Yeah.
But then at the time, I was a bit more high flyer than now. So he's like, why don't you just pronounce it instead of like the ER, pronounce it air. So Erdogan, Eddie Erdogan. I'm like, that actually has a pretty cool ring to it, you know. And I had no other ideas at the time. So I was like, okay, let's just go with that. And yeah, I don't even know if I, like, as a face especially, my character is really me, but amped up. I'm a very expressive, very, like, emotional fighter. Yeah, it's like I try to be Rocky Balboa.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, that's what it is. And even Too Cold was talking about that yesterday, like, the emphasis, especially on faces to sell.
Yeah.
And get that sympathy. Like, I look at it as a Rocky Balboa movie. You're fighting from the bottom. You're getting the crap kicked out of you. And then it's the huge comeback, like that underdog Cinderella story, you know?
Exactly.
It's huge, man. Like, and it's very easy to drift away from that and start copying other people and other people's mentality, which is, no, I got to get all my spots in. And yeah. I almost got to that because when you're with Chamber and isolated in it, you're doing it the right way. And there's many right ways, but one of the right ways. But then, you know, you start meeting other guys and seeing how many spots they're putting in their match.
Yeah.
And you're like, shit, like, if I only do these moves, I'm not going to look as good, you know. So you try doing more. But then you end up getting away from the basics, you know. Like, you got to sell. You got to facial expression. And that's what I'm good at. Like, yeah. I love selling, you know. Like, I want to get the crap kicked out of me and then fight back from the bottom, you know. It's the best story. So... that being said, I don't know what we were talking about.
Just your character, yeah. Your development. Because when I started and I started working on my character, obviously, for me, the thing that came easier, I'm intense. So it's healed right away. It became easy to me. And so, you know, I was working on that. But then after a couple of weeks, you know, I said, you know what? I want to work on really hard on developing my face aspect because... I just, number one, I have a son that's six. I don't want him seeing me as a heel for the most part. If I, when I wrestle my first match, I want him to be there and I want him to see me as the baby face, the good guy. Because that's, he's, you know, he's a huge Cena fan. It's all about the good guys and stuff like that. I don't want to, obviously, I wouldn't stop myself from being a heel. I'm just saying, when I found out that being a face was harder than being a heel.
It is, man.
Then for me that was a challenge. Oh, let me work at that, because if I can work at being a face, I can also, I work also at being a heel as well, but because it comes easier for me, let me work at being a face, because one day I might need to be a face.
You'll need to do both. I've done both. You need to do both. And starting off, like I wanted to be a heel too, because I just felt like I could let my creative side go more and do different things. But it's kind of like a hidden code. Not necessarily, because a lot of people start and they're heels right away, which is fine, you know. But I find it's much more beneficial. You start as a face, learn it, how to do a face. And then if you want to go heel, you go heel. But you know, like, what to get heat on. You know what you have to do as a face. You know, like, there's some guys that start as a heel and they have to do face from time to time. And they find it so difficult, you know.
The transition is probably harder from one to the other than back and forth.
Yeah, there's just some things you got to watch out not to do as a face, because it could come off heel-less. Like, little things. It could be, like, the smallest little things. What a face, less is more, fight back, underdog, warrior spirit, selling, facial expressions. Like, at one point you're just gonna know what it is, you know? You're just gonna get it, and it's not gonna be about the moves anymore.
Well, the selling aspect is a big thing that we learn. It's constantly pushed by Drew, which, because it's part of the business, it's very important. Either you're, whatever your face or heel, whatever the fact may be, if you're doing a good job at selling, you're doing a good job at telling a story.
Yeah.
And because it's so spot, there's so many feds now. There's so many guys that it's a spot fest. And when it's a spot fest, there's no selling involved, because you're just transitioning from one move to another. You don't have that facial expression.
You have to have a roller coaster feel. So,
of course,
you know, spot, but then chill out. Let it register. And like I said, man, like, when you're around that enough, it's very difficult to not start thinking that way. Man, maybe I should do a few more moves, because they're doing so many. Like, I don't want to look bad, you know?
Yeah.
But it just depends where you work, and just remember the basics. Remember the fundamentals. And, like, you know, they've said on WWE, Vince has said it on podcasts, like, this is your moneymaker, the face, right?
Yeah.
So it's all about selling. Heels sell differently than faces, for sure. But it's even little things. It's not just like, oh, like I'm hurt and I'm selling that. It's little things like Drew and Don Paisan, who used to come by at Chamber quite a bit before, emphasized on like, if I just take a move, instead of just lying on the floor and selling the floor where no one can see you, you look dead and you look like there's no chance for you, move always. Like, as a face, I try, if ever I'm getting bumped around in the heat, don't stay in one place. Like, boom, I took a move. Oh, I get up. I feed to one corner. I wait for him. So now we have a whole new area to work on. We have the corner.
Yeah.
So he sees I'm there. He's going to come there. Maybe he'll hit me on the turnbuckle. Boom. Oh, I'll feed to the ropes there. So he could choke me on the ropes, or he can, you know, Irish whip me into something. So even if I'm not fighting back, even if I'm not throwing punches and moves, I'm constantly moving around. So I still look like there's a chance. I don't look dead. Like, there's still hope for the fans to get behind you, you know?
Yeah.
So little things like that, you know, it's huge.
Yeah, I think it's when it comes to those little aspects in pro wrestling, it's, I think a lot of them get lost in translation.
Yeah.
Because they're only thinking about what's going to be the ending of the match. Because some people think that's all people remember. It's the ending, you know. And
not necessarily.
We do live in a time where, you know, it's OCD. It's like, just let's get there quick so I can move on to something else. But man, when I go see a good wrestling match, it doesn't matter if it's 6 minutes, 12 minutes, 20 minutes. If the story is good and they're doing a good job selling and making me believe in what they're doing. Even though I know the product is you know,
fixed,
whatever you want to call it, as long as the story they're telling is great and I get entertained, I'm all for it. You know what I mean?
The way you describe that, you were talking about yourself as a fan.
Yeah.
So that's the way the workers are supposed to be thinking of it, because you're working. You're working for the fan. So if I wanted to talk about this this example coming into the podcast. I'm glad I remember. I think it was one of the WrestleManias in 91 or something like that. Jake Roberts versus Rick Martel, the blindfold match.
Yes.
Dude, they barely did anything in the match.
When you think
of it, they barely did anything, and the crowd was freaking out.
Yeah.
So you did your job. You don't need to kill yourself. If you got the crowd freaking out like that, you did your job. So sometimes it's not about the reverse Hurricane Runas and the 630s and this and that, you know, like...
They told the story.
They told the story, and it was so entertaining. Yeah. Like, just the point, and then getting the fans, no, and then that way, like...
The fans got invested in the match, man, because of that aspect.
Yeah.
Because they involved the fans from the get-go in the match, especially Jake the Snake Roberts.
Some people didn't like it, but, like, man, I found that was genius. Yeah. Like,
if you're able to get the people invested in the match just by doing that...
You did your job.
Dude, that you hit a home run.
You did your job.
You didn't barely have to do any work that day.
You'll last longer. Your career will be better.
Yeah.
And it's not about being lazy and, oh, I don't want to do this move or take that. But if there's a reason for it, and it's easy to forget, man. I'm telling you. Like, I've done moves that, looking back, I'm like, there was no reason for this.
Yeah.
So, like, before doing a big move, like, when you're planning it, you always have to think of Drew in your head. Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
Is there a reason for it? Is there a payoff for it? If not really, if I could do another move and I'll get the same reaction, then change it, you know?
If the end result is going to be the same with a smaller
then
move,
why would I take that risk and be hurt?
Because Drew said something when I first started, and it stuck with me, is that we're all one bump away from ending our career.
Yeah.
Basically, is because it's the same thing in martial arts, the same thing in anything. You're always just one thing away from going, shit, I can't do this anymore. I feel like this is fucked, I'm hurt, or... God forbid something even more serious happens. And it's happened before.
It's happened.
But you can't think of those things, but it has to be in the back of your mind. Let's work safe. Let's work smart so that I can come back next week and work a different show and put money in put some food on the table for my family.
It has to do with your mentality, the feds you work for. I mean, some don't think necessarily that way. The people you work with, you know, you gotta not be... And you're a bit older and you have MMA experience, so you have a certain amount of confidence. So just remember, like, when you start and you're with someone that may want to do too much, in a respectful and nice way, you know, you could even say, look, I'm new. I'm not that comfortable with this. You can blame it on you being new. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But tweak it to what you know is the right way, what you know is the right formula, and not necessarily on what they're wanting. Like, there was for a while, at one point when I was wrestling, I was very into, like, the whole stiff exchange. Like, yeah, man, at one point, we'll just go Japanese on us, and you forearm me, I'll forearm you, and chop, chop, and just, like, back and forth exchange. Because at the time, I felt like it made it look like, okay, I'm tough. I could hang with these guys. Because a lot of the top guys work that way, unfortunately, in Quebec. A lot of the guys that go to other places work that way. So it almost looks like that's the way you have to do it to be successful.
Okay.
But if you look at WWE, they don't do that, man. They work to be safe and to last as long as they can.
Of course.
So it took me getting hurt a few times to realize, like, what am I doing? Like, am I trying to entertain me and show the boys in the back that I'm tough, or get the fans involved? And I could get the fans involved without getting stiffed like crazy, you know? So
it's somewhat of a gift, though. If you're able to entertain the crowd without getting that, then that part of that
talented.
Yeah.
That means you're talented.
And it, like you said before, we've said before, your career is just going to get longer if you take these small things. And it's not about taking them away. It's about realizing that for the most part, they're unnecessary in telling the story and in getting to the result, because it's a buildup.
For sure.
Pop, 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 pop. But it's good to know. I'm enjoying talking to you because obviously I'm getting certain things. You've been in matches. Like, I looked at the matches I'm looking at right now. There's just, you know, dozens and dozens of matches. You started your first match in July 2013. Is that right?
I think it was June.
June? Well, it was NCW? Was it your first? No.
Was it even the year before? No, you're talking about the Super Juniors? Battle of the Super Juniors?
I have.
No, that's something else. No, my first match, it might not all be on there. It's okay. My first matches I consider were actually TV tapings at the dojo, which I think you saw or you've heard
of. I wasn't there, but I've heard of, yes. Though, right? Definitely okay. Heard of, yeah.
So it was that concept, and I had two matches like that. And then the Friday after, which was like a few days later, people don't notice, but there was a show for ISW, which is Interspecies Wrestling, which is a huge fed out of the U.S., out of Connecticut, usually. But they do run some shows in Canada, especially around Ontario, Ottawa. So they wanted to have four guys from the chamber come in that aren't in the Fed usually, and just demonstrate what we do and have our own matches. And I wasn't supposed to be on that. I was the night before replacement because someone got hurt from our crew. So Drew asked me, and I'm like, shit, like, I did two matches, but they weren't in front of the crowd. It was just for TV Berthierville in Quebec. So I was like, okay, let's do it. And then it was a real crowd in Ottawa. And, you know, I realized right away that some crowds are a lot harder than others, man. Like, especially the 18 and over crowd, where you don't have the sympathy from the kids.
Yeah.
As a face, you got to sell another way. You can't be as cheesy because they're drunk. They're just going to boo on you. So, you know, you really have to learn to adapt to the crowd you're involved in, you know. And I thought I did a terrible job, but the promoter told me after, he's like, man, you did amazing. So that meant a lot to me. Like, besides Drew Onyx, who was obviously the first guy to believe in me, that promoter, Mike Roch from ISW, really, you know, gave me good confidence for that. And then from there, it took off. And I think a little while later, it was the Super Juniors.
So you wrestled at ISW?
Right? ISW, yeah.
How big was the crowd the first time you...
What it was there's another Fed in Ottawa called C4, which is a huge Fed, maybe the biggest one there. They've held between 300 to 500 people, so it's a really big Fed. What ISW was doing was like almost like a double show. They had ISW in the afternoon that started at like 1 o'clock.
Okay.
PM. And then there was like a supper break. You can go out, eat whatever, and then you come back for C4.
Okay.
So it's normal the ISW wasn't as packed in the morning, and it's also not where they run. They're usually in Connecticut, which is where their fan base is. But off the top of my head, I guess there was about 150.
Okay.
So it was a great experience. I fought Kevin, Coach Kevin Bryan.
Okay.
At the time, and he's so good, man. He despite how humble he is, and he'll say otherwise. He helped me a lot in the match, and that was from there. It just took off, and then.
How was your experience for the first time? So there was four guys from Torture. Was Drew there with you guys?
No, it was me versus Kevin. The second match. The first match was Boogly versus Olympico. If you've met him, I don't know.
I don't believe I have.
Yeah, he comes to the chamber once in a while. So he was They were the first match, and then it was us. And I was nervous because I'm like. I don't know what they're going to react. Like, if I do this and when I walk out, are they going to just look at me like, who's this loser? They've never met me before. They've never seen me. So it was nerve-wracking, and I have the tape at home. So I watch it once in a while to remind me. And I was like, the wrestling was good because we were taught how to wrestle.
Yeah.
But, you know, the interaction with the fans, to a certain extent, you have to learn as you go, right?
Of course.
Because, I mean, we don't have fans at Torture Chamber just there watching,
right? When you're doing
matches
or shines and stuff,
yeah,
you're
just
dealing with
the people. Yeah, we have us, but we're pretty supportive of each other. And no, the moves were cool. Just little things with the interaction. I'm like, okay, I could have done this or that. But that you learn as you go. And I had a habit my first year of filming all my matches. Like, I'll just have my, as long as the promoter was okay with it, of course, I'll put my camera in the back and film. And it
helped
out a lot.
That's a good habit.
Yeah, it helped out a lot. It was like Alex Shelley style, you know?
Yeah, if you have, if you're able to have all your matches on video and actually look at them.
Yeah.
And then critique yourself and have someone else critique it. It's, I think it's a big part. How was your experience? That was your first time having to deal with the locker room area. How was that experience?
It was cool because there were big names at the time that I didn't know who they were, but because I wasn't as involved in indie wrestling.
Of course.
Just started, right? But later on, I'm like, oh, okay, this is this guy, this is that guy. Those are big names. Like, I was like, whoa. And Sanjay Dutt was actually in the building that night from TNA.
Yeah.
Which was awesome. I got to meet him on my first show in front of a crowd, right? So, no, locker room was cool. I mean, I don't know how to really explain it. You'll see it as it goes. I mean, everyone, like, for most part, people that are working together are going to be close together because they're talking over their stuff. Or friends will be with friends. Some people eating, some people warming up, you know. Some people putting their makeup on or their outfit on. So you're going to, it's like a circus feel. You know, you're going to get a bit of everything.
Yeah. For the most part, people are welcoming and nice.
Oh, yeah. I've met some guys that weren't, but for the most part, everyone's cool. It's your job as the rookie to really go up and introduce yourself politely and respectfully. But no, for most part, people are cool. Especially if you're coming from Chamber, people know the product by now. It's out there, so you know. Two things are gonna happen. They're gonna be, like really looking at you to be good and not just be mediocre, because so far success has been related to the brand. But two, they're also going to be like, oh, cool, man. I wrestle with Shane Hawk, who was like the first graduate of Chamber. Or I wrestle with Stu Corvus or Eddie Erdogan or whatever. So they'll help you out, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's, you'll see how many friends Chamber has once you go out. There's quite a bit.
That's what I've been told. And it's when they found out you're from Chamber, they're like, okay, this guy is cool, or we can take him in. And I've wrestled with some of you guys or some of the guys from the Torture.
Exactly.
And kind of take you in.
It helps, man. Yeah. Word of mouth and connection in wrestling is huge. Like it's all it is, man, really.
Yeah, and it's nice to be part of a team that is so well known, because it makes our lives when we have to promote ourselves a bit easier, you know what I mean? Like, you're like, oh, you're from Torture, you're
yes
from Torture
and no, because you still gotta work to make
of
sure
course.
You represent it well, which I know you will, but as long as you can do that, yeah, man, like we have a little
there's
advantage, I guess I could say, you know, and that's
there
sense,
is,
yeah.
But there's also, you have to realize there's also an added pressure, because now you have to represent the school properly, and
as know, long as you do what you were taught and Drew thinks you're ready, it should go fine.
Yeah, that, like I said, once I put that trust into him, that's all it is. So you 2013, you get in, you're 5-6 months in, you get your first match, you get your feet wet.
Yeah.
From then on, it was like basically a foot race, like it was booking after booking, or how was that
experience? The first month after my first match, I had like maybe one booking, so it was a little quiet. But then after that, I was like, boom, whenever there was a need for someone, and that summer, somehow there was always a need for someone to fill in, I did. And that was a really cool summer because I was still learning, and I still am learning, of course, but I was really, really new then. And I had maybe like 15 matches by the time the summer was done, which is quite a bit for a summer. With summer, usually a lot of feds take time off. I went to Valley Field, MWF, wrestled there. They were like the fed to give me my first like chance to really go. That summer, I wrestled for Heavy MTL. Shane Hawk was organizing a wrestling at Heavy MTL, Heavy Mania.
They do
it yearly, and that was the first year. It was a weekend event, Saturday, Sunday, which was such a cool experience, man. And like so many little things like that. I went to... on a two or three night weekend at Quebec City with Drew for a show, Quebec City, and then it was Saint-Beauce-de-Prosper or Nashville, I don't know what, like some places like 4 or 5 hours away. And you're like, cool, man. Like, wrestling is really letting you go to places I would have never went. It was almost like in a movie, Population 200.
Yeah.
Guys on horses. Like, there was like a festival that day. So it was like lumberjack things. Who can saw like through the tree first, or like pig races, you know? Yeah, like, yeah. It was cool, you know, seeing stuff like that. And yeah, from there, NCW got word that they were interested in me, but we had something planned where I wasn't starting right away. So I just kept taking some random bookings here and there to get ready, kept training, and yeah, then started NCW. And yeah, I was introduced. Boogly was the Triple Crown champ at the time, and I was another already pretty well-known face.
Yeah.
Like, my first NCW match is online, and it's the crowd is actually pretty hot into it. And then I teamed with him for a while, and then it was on. It was like, okay, hunt for that belt. And it was a long stretch. It was like a year chase for that title.
Yeah, I can see here there's a, you know, from the get-go, there's you had a few matches, and it wasn't always for that belt. No. But there was definitely a build-up.
There was a build. At one point, I was teaming with Boogly a lot. The top not main eventer face, I guess I could say, secondary face or whatever. And by association, it helped me also to get my name out. We teamed a lot against a few teams and stuff. And then I faced him in like triple threats, fatal four ways. Always came close, you know, whatever. And then the opportunity happened. Jesse Champagne won the belt from him. And Boogly, unfortunately, had a few injuries at the time. So he was a bit out of the picture. So it really gave me the chance to step up. And then it was on, man. Like, me and Jesse had our first match, and we like stole the show. We came to the back, and it was a standing ovation by everybody. So awesome. I was really glad with that. And then they're like, okay, I guess we could start feuding these guys. And then we fought at Challenge Mania, and 10 seconds into the match, I got like a huge cut over my eyelid, and I almost lost my eyeball like 8 years ago playing a stupid sport. Since then, I've been very cautious with my eye, especially my left one. So as soon as the cut happened, blood just rushed through my head. And this was like 10 seconds, 15 seconds in the match. So I couldn't see. And I couldn't tell if it was my eyelid or my eye that I was bleeding from. And I tried asking the ref and get more info, but they weren't very helpful. So I was like, I just didn't know where I was bleeding from, and I couldn't see. And unfortunately, we couldn't finish the match. It was a triple threat. So Boogly ended up staying with Jesse, and they finished the match, thank God, you know.
Okay. But how did you get injured? How was the cut? Do you remember?
Oh my God. It was a body slam. It was something that like made no sense. Like, as he lifted me and slammed me, my face was what's just here. You can't see it in the podcast. Like, his elbow kind of hit my face. Like, I don't know how it happened. I guess I got too much of a swing or something.
Wow.
Or he was too anxious, or I don't know what. But I bumped, and then they continued, and then I'm like, what the hell? Like, it just started going, you know? Like, shit. It's not very visible now, but yeah, I was so pissed, man, because Challenge Mania is like NCW's biggest show of the year.
Yeah.
So I got to the back, and I was cursing, and Drew was like, I never seen you mad before, you know? It was like the first time. But blessing in disguise, because up until that point, there were a few opportunities where, like, I don't want to give the inside scoop, but like, I was supposed to kind of get to that title, and it didn't work out based on whatever certain reasons. So it kept getting postponed. So, you know, it was just building harder and harder in me. You know, I wanted to get that title. It's almost like an obsession now. So Challenge Mania came, and that happened. So I'm not getting it on that night either. It was like, man, I thought it was like rock bottom almost, but It's funny because I was really over with the crowds getting into that match. Like, I was getting chanted like crazy. I came out through a few shirts in the crowd. Nice. Like, it was hot, you know. That happened, and I was like, oh, it's going to be downhill from here. They kept chanting my name when I went to the back, and I could be wrong, but they kept chanting my name a few times later too. So it was like they didn't get enough. It was almost like the best sympathy for me you know. It was almost like Macho Man and Ricky Steamboat with the throat.
Yeah.
But me was the eye, right? So then...
So he got you over. He got me hard.
Yeah, like in a weird way. I was over, but I got that much over, like with that injury. And then the next show, I came out with like a huge Band-Aid on my... Like a huge thing on my eye to cover it up. And I was calling him out, and I wanted to face him, but then the commissioner says, like, you're not clear to wrestle, so you can't wrestle. And the fans booed, and it was a build. It was a tease. until we finally fought. We fought a few, actually more than once, but then a few months passed, and September we actually had the blow-off match where we were even in wins, and then it was finally for the belt, and it was the biggest payoff. Like, I got the title, I won that night, and like, I don't want to like sound arrogant or I could be biased, but my feeling at that time during the feud with Jesse, I truly believed that maybe besides Pat Gannett, who was their number one guy, that I was the top face. It could have been Pat then me.
Yeah.
But, and I'm not usually an arrogant guy for people that know me, but I truly believe by fan reaction and their care that I was at very minimum second top face at the time. And it was all because NCW gave us a chance to feud. Because if you look at the history a bit, there's not many times that that belt was feuded.
Yeah.
It was more a secondary title, like an IC belt. But the champ would have it, and it was just random opponents every week.
Yeah.
The feud was surrounded around the main event in NCW always. So me, Drew, a lot of people felt, you know, like it was time. Let's put that belt back on the map. Let's show it that this is the workhorse belt, you know, and let's feud over it. And they gave us a chance. And look, we won NCW Feud of the Year. Because of that, so yeah,
it proves that your hard work and the actual people got, like, we're actually into this feud. And for me, feuding over a belt, it's something that is lost somewhat in pro wrestling nowadays. It's like,
not just that, it's rushed. Like, they gave us a good 6-7, maybe 6 months to feud.
Yeah,
over
I
it.
Can see here you guys fought back and forth.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And
sometimes it's rushed, and like I said, like since then. Now, well, a little while ago, Max Fury and Leon Saver feuded over it,
yeah.
Which was awesome too. But before that, it was me and Jesse. And before that, there wasn't really a feud. So it's important, man.
I can see here, I have the history of the Triple Crown one. And it's like, there's not really any like guys that are fighting for like two or three times, except I can see you and Jesse. And then there's Leon, where the actual belt actually switched.
Yeah, well, once, Leon and Fury had like a best of five or something. So the belt changed a few times in that process.
Changed twice.
It changed Fury twice. Was a champ, maybe, yeah.
Then Leon won, then dropped it, and then won it again. And then he won it the last time at Challenge Mania.
And that shows, like, I don't know if it's, I don't want to say fear or what, because, like, I love NCW, and they've always been nothing but good to me. But, you know, for some reason, the feuds always surround the main event. So by doing that, it was great, because if I, you know, I got hurt at the time and I left the Fed regardless. But if I would have stuck, you know, I was so over after that Triple Crown run. They could have used me to move up and create a new star in the making, you know, because the top guys aren't always going to be there. Right. You got to create new stars. It just didn't work out. It wasn't meant to be at the time. But even for new guys, like, it's important. Like, they're using Leon really well now, which I'm glad, because Leon's, like, one of the top guys, man. He really knows how to work.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen good stuff from him. Yeah. I've seen him in a few indie shows, and he always busts his ass out,
yeah.
You know? So, it brings me to my next question, because I when I did my research, I realized that you won the belt in September 2014, the feud of the year with Champagne. You became the Triple Crown champion. Big hoo-ah. Good for you. Obviously, you explained how it felt to win all that stuff. This was your first singles championship?
Yeah, I had won a tag belt before in CRW, which was a smaller Fed. Me and Meredith, another wrestler. But yeah, singles title, this was it. And it was a good confidence boost, you know, like they're trusting me with a singles title, you know? And like a week after, it was me versus Pat Gannett, title versus, not title versus title, just like no title, but.
Yeah.
In my mind, I was like, okay, they're testing me. Can I hang with the big guy? You know.
Yeah.
So it was cool, man.
How was that match? Because Pat Gannett is if you're into indie wrestling and locally,
it went well. It went well. It wasn't at the NCW venue. It's like NCW has a few spot shows around the year, and it was in Verchères. Yeah, yeah. Thanks. Oh my god, I wasn't able to pronounce it. Yeah, Verchères, which is about like an hour or some away.
Yeah.
But no, man, it was cool and. I felt I could hang with him really well. I did my part in the match. He did his part. He had good things to say about it after. So,
yeah, because like I said, for people, if you don't know who Pat Gannett is, he's pretty over here in local.
Yeah, man, he's a top guy and he works hard and he wants it, man. Like he dreams this. Like he really loves it. So
former champion.
Yeah.
NCW champion.
Yeah.
I see that you didn't, you never lost that belt though.
No,
you vacated it. I'm mostly yeah. due to injury, I'm assuming.
Yeah, unfortunately, well, I was doing a few feds at the time, and I was wrestling also in IWS, International Wrestling Syndicate.
Yeah,
which is like one of the top feds right now. And I had a match and I got hurt in it. I actually had a concussion and it wasn't my first, so it really put things in perspective. And I was in no shape to defend the title. You know, it wouldn't have been fair to the guy who fights for it, because I wouldn't have been 100%. It wouldn't have been fair to me or the fans. So I vacated it, and Fury won it after that. Max Fury, rightfully so, because that guy is awesome. And yeah, so never lost it.
And you've never wrestled in NCW ever since? Is that was your last?
That was my last. No real reason, but like even before the injury, I was kind of on my way out, like mentally. Like yeah. I felt like. Which, looking back, I don't know if it was the right thing or not, but I was at a point where I was doing so well in NCW that other feds were starting to realize that I could work. Guys like IWS, C4 in Ottawa, which we spoke about previously. The booker of C4 was very fond of me, which I, to this day, I'm so appreciative of, because he didn't have to. He really stepped up to try to like get me there, you know, which I really appreciate. And those were the feds that... No offense to NCW, like I said, I have nothing but good things to say about them, but feds like, in my opinion at least, I don't know at all, but in my opinion, feds like IWS and C4 had a reputation to have brought in a lot of top guys, and in the same respect, to have sent out a lot of guys. So they, like C4, build guys, and then send them out. So they end up wrestling, or IWS did the same, their track record, they ended up wrestling in places like CZW, which led to PWG, which led to ROH. So there was a great track record. So for me, it was like, I want to do this full time. I want to advance. So I feel like I have to be in these places to advance.
Of course.
NCW runs once every 2 weeks. So by being full time there and being a champion there, it makes it very difficult to accept other bookings, because you're used so often in that fed. So I got to a point where I was like, you know, C4 runs once a month. IWS runs once every month and a half. So I'm like, I think it would be better I take those feds and spend the rest of the time back at chamber, back at training, you know, and develop myself that way. But yeah, everything happened and I ended up getting injured. So I kind of put things on a back pedal.
Yeah. In a certain way, like you said, like... when you're in the indie circuit,
yeah,
it's not like you're in WWE where you're exclusive to them. Like I see a lot of guys work NCW and I see them work IWS and I see them work different local feds.
Yeah,
that's why they call you independent wrestlers for the most part. You're
not free contracted. For the picket. Exactly. You're not contracted. Like, yeah.
Whoever wants me takes me, and it's kind of a double-edged sword. If you're really good and popular. Then at a certain point, like I was talking to Jessica, and she asked, like, how many bookings do you refuse? She's like, sometimes it's frustrating. I can't accept every. I have to pick and choose.
Yeah.
I'm already booked this Saturday. I can't. And then someone else comes by, and you're like, oh, I'm already booked and stuff.
But
like
I will say, and I had this talk with Jessica already, like, looking back, it always takes you to not fuck up, but something to go wrong for you to look back and be like, I could have done this or that or that. So even to you, like, I know at first it's super... like it's a huge confidence builder when a fed says they want to use you, and you're like, yeah, wherever, whoever wants to book me could book me. I'm gonna wrestle everywhere I can, and it's good in a way because it got my name out. I truly feel if I didn't do that and wrestle out all the places I did, I wouldn't have been as successful as I was.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have won Quebec Rookie of the Year unanimously voted and etc. It was due because I worked well, I was good, but I also worked at a lot of places. But at the same respect, doing that is making your chances of getting hurt higher, getting you to burn out faster.
Of course.
And you're not even like, it will get you to not stop looking forward to shows. Of course, I always looked forward to shows. But like you're wrestling, like at least me, I work during the week. And then, you know, I'd wrestled sometimes 2 times a weekend. It's happened 3 times a weekend or just a casual once a weekend. That it got really tough, man. And then you got that weekend off and it's like, okay, it feels good.
Yeah.
And then you look at some other guys and like Drew's advice, which is, you know, choose top quality feds.
Yeah.
One or you can have more than one, but not that many. Try to have different areas. and just work for those feds, you know, and when time's right, then you go to somewhere else. I kind of, I guess, maybe made the mistake of wrestling too many places at the same time. So it's almost like, okay, I could see Eddie on Friday night, but then I could see him on Saturday night. I could see him the next week. So it's almost like I lost a bit of my, okay, I'm looking so much forward for NCW because that's the only place I could see Eddie Erdogan.
It's or a bit of an overexposure. IWS.
It's a bit of an overexposure. And I didn't do it forever. At one point, I did realize, like at one point, I was only doing NCW and IWS.
Yeah.
Which is okay. But yeah, you just got to make sure to put that in perspective and realize not to overkill yourself also. Like, it is fun and we're doing this for fun. So, oh, if wrestling is fun, I want to do it as much as possible. Of course. Get that. But, you know, strategically, it's better to pick and choose quality bookings. And if you do it in a professional way, the booker that gets rejected, you could say, won't take it harshly because you were respectful and, you know.
Of course.
You made it clear that the future, there's always a possibility.
There has to be an understanding. You're not always, I mean, as much as when you start, like when I get eventually start and I'm lucky and I get all these feds and obviously I want to get as much exposure, as much experience. For me, the experience is a big thing. Mm. But what, like you explained, like I don't want to be burning myself out 6 months in and then I start getting injured because I can't recoup. Not only that, but if I work every weekend, sometimes twice, three times a weekend, how much am I going to be after a while, number one, 100%, how much am I going to be committed to wanting to go to practice all the time?
And it's like, yeah, and then there's practice. Like, you're going to deteriorate. So, like, you got to be careful with that. Like, choose one or two, preferably in different areas, and that's it, man. Like, because you're training up chamber anyway, so you're going to get your experience.
Of course.
You know, and it's easier said than done because if I, like, Drew told me that when I started. A few other people told me that too, but it's easier said than done, man. When you first start, you're like,
overwhelmed by all the attention. Like,
you
want to
do it, you know? Yeah, it's all the attention you don't have, you didn't have before. Like, it's hard to judge it. But yeah, looking back, like, that's something I could say, you know? And of course, you can't plan when injuries happen. Unfortunately, I got like two big ones starting off, which shot me in the foot a little bit. But since then, like, my mentality has really been like just a few quality bookings, and as much as possible, go train chamber, train gym, you know, like, and train for bigger things. Like we have the Two Cold Scorpio seminar coming up. Like, someone, I don't remember who it was, but someone told me once, if you can choose like a seminar with a well-respected person or a booking, choose the seminar, man. Like, who cares? Like, I don't want to say who cares about the booking, but there will always be other bookings. What you learn at the seminars are invaluable. It's going to last forever.
Yeah.
So, you know, things like that are really going to push you higher than, you know, taking a last minute booking somewhere, you know, just for fun, like that, you know.
Sometimes you want to take that booking just for the experience. Like, I remember when I started in martial arts and when I was ready to compete, it was mostly, I started with grappling tournaments. Mm. Well, grappling tournaments, you're not getting hit. You're not getting, if you're doing it well, you're not getting injured. Right. So if there was a one every weekend, I wanted to be there.
But that's
weekend.
Fine because you don't, you're not just trying to keep the prestige, keep the secrecy of me, keep the fans guessing. It's a legit fight, right?
Yeah, yeah,
so if you can stay safe and you're winning and you're moving up in rank, that's fine.
Yeah.
Whereas wrestling, even if you're always winning, it's not necessarily you moving up, right? There's more to it than your talent, unfortunately, at sometimes. You can be very talented and not move up because someone said something bad about you or someone doesn't think highly of you, which does happen, unfortunately.
There's a lot, I'm sure there's a lot of politics involved in pro wrestling, back chatter, backroom chatter, stuff like that, that you have to kind of escape or kind of like just let roll off your back and go, it's part of the business, I have to accept it, but at the end of the day, professional wrestlers, especially when you're in the indie circuit, you're in it for you. Mm-hmm. There's people helping you out, but you got to promote yourself the right way, the smart way, so that, like you said, you don't want to overexpose yourself. You don't want to burn yourself out. So that when you don't want to be to the point where you could barely wrestle because you've been booking yourself over and over.
Much.
And then one day the big guys come knocking, and you're like, can
I'm
you
not
do
ready.
This? And you're like, shit,
I'm
man.
Not ready. Yeah.
I'm ready, but I'm so like, oh.
Or I got hurt in front of, you know, this little crowd and I can't go to a big tryout now or whatever.
So.
And to escape the politics, like, it's not easy, but just be humble, be respectful, make friends with everybody, and if you can't make friends, at least let them know that, you know, you're open to the idea and like you're respectful of everybody and you work hard, and odds are people won't talk, you know. There's some people that are going to be always scared of their image and they don't have enough confidence, so they feel the need to bury other people for them to get over. But it isn't too often, luckily I haven't seen it too often, but you do still see it.
Yeah. Before we end, because we've been going for about an hour and a half.
Cool.
It was amazing talking to you because it was same thing with Jessica. It gives me a perspective. As someone like me that is training to become a professional fighter, that is going to make his debut hopefully soon, it gives me, if I can absorb as much of information as possible from you, from all the guys, it's great. You know, I try to pick people's brain I want to understand. I'm more calculated. When I was younger, it was more of an impulse. I just put your head down, just move forward till you hit your target. Most of the time, I just fucking end up missing the target because I didn't look where I was going. Now I'm a bit more calculated. It was like, oh, okay, I can't really rush into this. Be smart about this. Like I said, I don't have that time anymore like yeah. I used to. It's just something that it's not given to me, you know. And so when I have guys like you and I get to talk to guys like you, when I saw the Tuco Scorpio yesterday, it was like all I wanted to do was pick his brain because that this is one in a lifetime. You get to talk to somebody that's done it all, it's been everywhere, it's been all over the world. You got to
train with this guy, like, and you get to train. How awesome
is that, you know? It gives you that confidence. Like if he tells you you're doing a good job, like he knows what he's doing. He's not just being nice. He's really sincere and knows what he's saying. The same thing with Drew.
Yeah.
Like I'm confident that when he's telling me I did a good practice, it's because I actually did a good practice.
Yeah, he's not gonna blow smoke up your ass for no reason. Yeah. Like if he says something, there's a reason, you know.
So before we end this podcast, obviously you're a wrestling fan.
Yeah, man,
pro wrestling fan. Like me, you know, it's something. It's part of my life. My kid loves it. My girlfriend loves it. We watch it. We spend some time
That's
together.
That's awesome.
Is there a current wrestler? Now we can go back to past wrestlers. I can name you a shitload of people I enjoy watching from the 80s, from the 90s. Current product on TV. Obviously, you get WWE, which for the most part. It's hard to watch ROH on TV. It's hard to watch TV. Yeah. It's not always accessible. You're watching WWE, which is the main product. Who are the performers that you currently look out at that you enjoy watching?
Well, for WWE, I don't watch the weekly programs as much as I used to, but I usually don't miss the pay-per-views. I mean, it's biased. Of course, Kevin Owens, you know, Sami Zayn, guys that came out of here. Finn Balor is just amazing. Daniel Bryan, Dolph Ziggler, Cesaro. You can keep going, man. Everyone has their own. Everyone has their own, you know, their own thing. As much as a lot of guys bash on Cena, only recently I'm admiring him more and more. Whereas this guy, like, who may not have the best moveset, who may, you know, some people may knock on him, he's kept a top position for over 10 years and managed to stay in that position, and he's like the number one merch seller and all, like
it's by far.
So that alone is impressive, even though like I rather watch someone like, you know, Daniel Bryan who I used to watch in ROH also. Like you got to respect everyone for their own things, you know. You know, of course Undertaker, yeah, I'll just keep naming. I can't really precise.
I think everybody that's on their roster that we mainly see. Like I've watched pay-per-views. Yeah. I also follow the week.
Okay.
I watch Raw every Raw. I don't watch SmackDown. I just don't have time. It's enough, you know. But I do watch Raw. I follow the storylines. I follow. Look, a performer is a performer at this point. They each have their little zing, their little thing. So for me, when I watch the product on a weekly basis, when I watch the pay-per-views, I enjoy it more as a fan. Like, oh, what?
Sure.
I'm looking for that surprising experience. What's going to surprise me? Who's losing the belt? Who's going over?
Sure.
I critique it less. But when I watch Raw, I tend to spend a lot more time in keeping my eye out on, okay, how do they cut the promos? Does this make sense? Right. How do they do the match? How's the build up? Because normally they have less time.
Yeah.
They're given less time. And so I try to see how do they maximize their 6 minutes or 8 minutes. I also watch how the refs work. So that because one thing that Drew has told us many times is that if you're able to, you're not only two guys in the ring. If you're doing singles match, there's a third guy in the ring. There's a ref. Man. You have to involve the ref. Important. So I think a lot of people don't understand this. And so it's funny because a lot of the matches I'm not interested in the wrestlers because I know they're either, I know the, what to expect. I know their move set and that's all they use. I'm going to pay attention to the ref, how he positions himself, how the wrestlers get him involved so that. Once I get into the ring, I'm used to working one on one, but then all of a sudden there's a third guy in the ring that people sometimes forget about.
And I'm glad you brought it up, man, because yeah, the ref is so important for a lot of things, and even the refs at the indie level, I find some of them forget over time or aren't caring as much, or they feel like they're not as important, but they are. Like, when you have good refs, and I've had some great refs, I've had some not as good refs, you see the difference. Like, if something goes wrong, he's the guy that can help you communicate to the... I mean, we're kind of breaking kayfabe a little much, but he's really the third guy. You're three in there that you're all working together, and if there's an injury, if there's a spot that has to get taken over, you know, if there's something that has to go, if you're running out on time, like, he's the guy, you know, so it's very important. And that's another thing with Chamber. Like, we had a few refs that came out of Chamber that learned and graduated through Chamber. So it's even that is covered there, you know. So it's for sure.
But sometimes we do shines in the ring, and they make sure to put a ref in there, so you're able Drew makes sure to emphasize on you got to involve the ref, and the ref has to also involve himself to a certain point.
For sure.
But if you're the heel, you got to put him over, but you also have to show the fans that he's the authority in the ring. And you can't really just
refs get buried too much. We are competing with MMA to a certain extent. We're not, but look at the refs in MMA, like Big John and all that. These guys don't mess around. Like, they look like tough guys,
of course.
Unfortunately, the refs in WWE have kind of, like, not become a joke, but you know, they're kind of not respected as much as they should. They're the authority, so
yeah.
If you're the heel, you gotta cheat, but you gotta give him the respect. You know, you can't just cheat in front of his face like he doesn't mean anything to you. You know,
because you can't take that power away from him, because then he becomes useless in the ring. But it's that's those like little psychology things that the average fan doesn't know or doesn't realize. But when you're training at the torture chamber and Drew puts these little things in your head, and then you're in a match, you're like, oh yeah, I remember Drew told me this the second week I was there, and it just stuck into my head.
And it's funny, now when you watch wrestling, you're watching it with a critical analysis. It
ruined my fan.
Yeah, man, I know the feel. Sometimes you gotta like sit back and be like, okay, stop trying to guess what's gonna happen. Yeah. Just enjoy it.
My girlfriend hates it.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm like, I was watching the Money like in the Bank. You're like,
what's gonna happen?
I'm like, he botched that move. She's like, can you just shut up? Yeah. Let me enjoy it. I don't care if he botched it. I just want to watch. I'm like, yeah, there's a few moments where I was like,
you gotta let yourself enjoy it also.
Yeah. Sometimes it's hard for me, especially now, to separate the fan from the critique. You're like, no, that
doesn't. It'll get harder.
But it's good because at least I pay attention, you know? So I enjoy the product. I mean, like I said, if I had the chance to see more of ROH, New Japan, sometimes I watch on TV, they put New Japan on, and I enjoy watching their products. It's totally different than WWE, and it gives you that aspect of like, oh, okay, so I don't have to limit myself to spot after spot or selling this way when you can be a bit more stiff, not really stiff, but sell differently with New Japan, because it opens doors, and if you're more, I guess, versatile, you'll get...
Depends where you work too. Like,
of course.
In Japan, like, they are very into that back and forth, let's just strike each other, you know, kind of thing. And there's a market for that, which is great. But yeah, like, my only thing, like I mentioned before with the stiffness, is like doing it night after night at one point is going to become detrimental.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I can imagine.
If I'm wrestling someone who I know he's tough and we have a history and we like each other and we're like, yo, tonight, let's let it hang out, man. Like, that's cool. You could do it. But it's just the night after night thing that I find it's a bit, you know, wrong.
I think these types of match has to be, you have to keep them for big events, bigger events, so that the crowd, there's a build up. Like, oh man, these guys have been going at it tonight. They're going to really let it go. And then you put forward a match and the crowd just, you get over, you get that pop, which is one of the things I can't wait to experience, is that pop that like, oh shit, these people are chanting or booing. It's vice versa. Right, if you're a heel, right, or your face, if they're booing and cursing at you, that means you've done your job as a heel. So you gotta, right, be inside. You're like, ah, it worked. You know,
do what you gotta do.
So, listen, man. It's been fun having you on. It's a great experience, you know. I'm glad that you chose to come on the podcast.
It was awesome, man. Yeah, I told you straight up. I'm like, man, like anything professional that's supporting indie wrestling and specifically Quebec,
yeah,
I'm all for it, man. Like whatever I could do to help out.
And like I said to Jessica, this podcast thing, it takes off. I'm just going to keep having people on.
Yeah.
You back, Jessica, yeah, man, back, people, sure, back on, stuff like that. Where can people reach you if they want to check out what you're up to and stuff like that?
Facebook, usually Facebook. Yeah. I have my page, Eddie R. Dogan, and my actual page as well. Like, guys, feel free to talk. Even fans, if you have any questions, I'm usually very good at answering. That's where people can contact me for bookings as well.
Okay.
So, yeah, man, Facebook.
Facebook, Twitter, you on Twitter?
No, I had a Twitter once and I'm not really on it. I have to get back on that though, yeah.
So Facebook, so yeah, check out Eddie R. Dogan's Facebook page. You have a fan page and your personal page?
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect. Check it out. If you have any questions for him, feel free to ask. I'm sure he'll be more, sure, glad than to communicate. Same thing for the podcast here. Thanks for the listeners. Thanks for everyone that tuned in to listen. You can check out our Facebook page as well, Pro Wrestling Central. We are on Twitter at PWC_podcast. That's PWC_podcast. And you can send any questions or tweet out any questions. Same thing on the Facebook page. And me, myself, also on Twitter at Steph Poulin. That's STEPHPAULIN. Thanks to everybody for hitting that download button, and we'll catch you again very soon. Thank you.
Later.
Later, bye.